Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Inspire Your Life podcast with me, your host, Aarti Ravikrishnan. I believe we find inspiration all around us, especially from the stories that we all have in us. My aim with the Inspire Your Life podcast is to bring some of those real stories to light, stories of my guests that resonate with you and me. It's by listening to these stories that we can be inspired and motivate ourselves to overcome, find a new path, and rise even higher than we thought possible. Show today is another one of my Tasha 10 colleagues, a newer member actually, Matt Stone, and we're going to be talking about there's no such thing as win-lose. I'm sure you're going to be quite interested in this, everyone. So Matt is the CEO of Behavioral OS, a global agency that provides leaders with a proven method developed by none other than an MIT behavioral scientist for proliferating the two most important ingredients for any company's success, that being trust and respect. Matt draws on such a broad experience of over 25 years as a business development professional, entrepreneur, and a former practicing attorney. He brings a global perspective to all of his engagements, having spent over 15 years of his life living in Europe and Asia. And Matt says he's an irrepressible optimist who believes strongly that in the business of life, we all either win together or we all lose together, everyone, which is so interesting because we often hear about the win-lose situation and not the win-win or the lose-lose, as you're suggesting, Matt. And with that, Matt, it is such a pleasure to welcome you to the Inspire Your Life podcast today.
Oh, thank you so much. I am delighted to be with you. I can't wait for this conversation.
Oh, absolutely. And I know you are under the weather, Matt, so thank you so much for still bringing it to our chat today. I so appreciate that. Now, I've just given everyone the very high-level bio to you. Let's get to know Matt a little bit more. Tell us more.
Oh, gosh. In the beginning, I was actually born in the state of Oregon in the United States on the west, okay. So the Pacific Northwest in the United States. So if people aren't familiar, think Seattle, kind of in between Seattle and San Francisco on the West Coast.
Okay.
Lots of mountains. I was born there. My parents were really, really young. They kind of eloped at 19. And had me a couple of years later. So I had very young parents. We were not economically well off. And my dad joined the Army.
Okay.
And he went into Defense Language Institute in Monterey, California. That's where they train people to speak different languages.
Okay.
So he, at the time, it was the end of the Cold War, and he was learning Czech. And so that's when the adventures began, because as a young kid, I think I was 4 or 5 when we first moved. We moved down to California to a place called Fort Ord, California, which is now a shuttered military base, but it was a very large operation near Monterey.
Okay.
And that's when, you know, I started the global adventures that have never ended. from there, we got transferred to Texas and then Germany.
Wow.
And then back to Oregon, and then Kansas, and then back to Oregon. And so fast forward, I ended up with a history degree from the Robert D. Clark Honors College at the University of Oregon. Mm-hmm. And I was in sales, and I thought I was going to go to law school.
Yeah.
Always. I mean, that was always the plan. Okay. I thought, well, you know, I'm not ready to go yet. I want to go somewhere else that I haven't been. I have never been to Asia. Mm-hmm. So I kind of started doing some research and settled on teaching English in Japan. And and there began the adult chapter of my global affairs movement.
Right.
So, So that's, you know, set that off. And I ended up back in Silicon Valley working for a Silicon Valley startup that my friend owned. And then I went to law school in Hawaii, actually. Okay. And I had a family law practice in Oregon for a few years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then I was back in Hawaii. So I've just done a lot of different, it's always been people related, business development, growing, building businesses, and practicing law for a bit too. So they're all interwoven somehow. They all intersect.
You know, I firmly believe that. Even with my own business, everyone sort of says, "Bharti, these don't seem to make sense in terms of a value chain, but it makes sense to me." Absolutely. So I get what you're saying.
That's right.
And if anything, Matt, that diversity of experience, I mean, that whole sort of army, you know, kind of culture and environment that you were brought up in, the traveling, and then you making that conscious decision about, oh, I actually want to go to a different place that I haven't been to before. All of that just adds to, I suppose, the depth of what you bring to all of these opportunities that you work with, you know, startups, with companies and all of that. So beautiful. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that with us. Now, let's get to the heart of it. Okay. So we're talking about there's no such thing as a win-lose. Okay. Why? Why do we say that?
Well, I'm going to actually draw us back to the intro, which is one of the things I learned. I didn't realize I was learning it early on moving around the world, was every time we would land, it was very unstable. It was unsettling.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, as a kid, you kind of want stability, actually. And so it wasn't all roses. I mean, it was very hard. So every time we moved, I had to reestablish friends and lose old ones. And it was, you know, I'm a huge extrovert. I'm, you know, so it was very hard. But what I figured out was what was in the beginning largely a survival mechanism, although also natural to my personality, but I a learned thing was that in terms of surviving in a new place, you needed people.
Right.
You needed relationships. And without those, you really suffered. But you know, it's win-lose, it's win-win or lose-lose in that situation too. Because if you go to a place where you're not accepted, people tend to do more poorly. They don't fit into the society. They are not a part of. So now they're separated from, and destructive things happen, you know, and we know that socioeconomically and statistically around the world. So yeah, all of these lessons I didn't realize I was learning, but I learned that really early on. So it's always been about the people, and different types of people make the world a better place. Diversity is great. So yeah. Okay. So I think I've lost the thread a little bit, but the win-win or lose-lose, I think I carry that forward. I became an attorney and I ended up, and I didn't really choose this. I mean, I made a choice, but it wasn't like my plan was to become a family law attorney. It just kind of ended up, I went back to Oregon after law school. I passed the bar. Yeah. I was interviewing for different jobs, and the job that I got was in a family law practice. Now, I've also come to learn that a lot of things in life that you think are random aren't. that we're being driven by forces deep inside of us that we may not even recognize, you know, our attraction to things.
Yes.
And in my case, so I ended up in this family law practice, and I was doing largely divorces and custody battles. We also did some civil litigation that was non-family law related. I mean, I represented people in criminal court. I did civil insurance stuff. So I did a few other things too.
All right.
What I saw firsthand in even more explicit, sort of tangible terms was this win-win, lose-lose thing.
Okay.
And it was the people who came to me were not in a collaborative mood, shall we say.
I supposed to put it lightly, Matt. Yes, right.
So I'm not denigrating the choice to get divorced at all. That's a choice that many people need to make for very good reasons. So I am in no way judging anyone who's thinking about getting a divorce or has been divorced. That is not my point. Right. The clients that I often saw, though, that would come to us were ones that wanted that were in a real fight, because the people who weren't in a fight didn't need to hire as many lawyers. They tended to, you know, they kind of worked it out and then got someone to sign it for them.
Right.
But the work I was doing was more that adversarial. So the wedge of divorce battles that I was in was the most contentious ones.
Okay.
And it was the ones where the people tended to have a mentality of win-lose.
Okay.
Rooted in deep fear, insecurity about money, insecurity about a whole lot of stuff.
Right.
And now you have this disruptive separation that, you know, threatens all of the base instincts. So the fight or flight's kicking in. And that's when people act their most irrationally vicious towards each other.
Oof, I can just imagine.
So out of hurt and pain and fear and resentment, Now you're an instrument of that person. Your job is to advocate for them. And what they're telling you is, I want to destroy this person.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I, at the time, was not emotionally, I was intellectually capable of it.
Yes.
I was skilled, you know, I was skilled in many ways. What I didn't realize was I didn't have the emotional maturity to handle that.
Well, you know, that's actually what I'm thinking about, because if you're, if, especially when you're in this adversarial, as you said, sort of, you know, these meetings going on with deep emotion, you talked about fear and pain and all of that. And here you are as this instrument, part of this. I mean, what did it do for you? What was going on with you in this process? As much as you're trying to separate it, but it's hard to, right?
Well, I wasn't good at separate. I mean, I have friends who are doing this now, and the ones who are successful at it are the ones who really are able to have a healthy, they are in a place with themselves that they can separate themselves emotionally from their clients, often their clients' trauma and trauma responses and all the shame that's thrown in there. I mean, shame and trauma, my goodness. If we could get rid of those two things in the world, we wouldn't have leaders that, you know, murdered millions of people or had to control everything. But in this case, I had some sort of personal I don't want to say demons. I don't know that that really resonates with me, because it wasn't demonic, but it was like unhealed things in my life from the from the childhood that I had, which was full of opportunity to learn, but it also was very challenging. The divorce was very hard on me when my parents divorced. We were in Germany at the time and moved from Germany to Oregon, and my dad stayed in Germany. And so I lost my father basically at a young age, and I was traumatized over that. And so I had all of these things that I had been carrying inside of me, feelings of abandonment, feelings of lots of things that I hadn't really confronted. My family law practice really accelerated the confrontation of those things, because it triggered me in every way.
Every way, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm grateful for it now, but at the time it was very, very painful.
Of course. Of course. I can only imagine. I can imagine, you know, as you said, you felt ill-equipped at that time to be able to make that separation, because a lot of it touched home, right? You had gone through these experiences in a similar vein, around, you know, divorce and things like that. So so I can picture this. Matt is there. You're doing what you're doing on behalf of your clients, but there's this deep self-awareness of, okay, I'm kind of coping and maybe not coping, but you're getting to learn more about what your, you know, your childhood and how those things impacted you. What were some of those initial things that you started to look towards doing to help you become better equipped to deal with the emotional drain that these situations placed you in?
Well, in that case, and I'm not prescribing this for everyone who's, you know, starting to get more self-awareness around things they need to fix. But in my case, I knew at a certain point that I needed to stop doing the job, that it was not the right thing for me at that time. And that it was not the song of my heart. Even in a perfectly healed state, I knew deep down, this was not the song that my heart wants to sing. And if I continue in an activity that goes so against what I was, I believe, you know, kind of made to do, that eventually is going to be a massive reckoning.
Of course.
Because you have to stay in a delusional state about yourself in order to cope for a while in a situation where you're misaligned with who you really are.
I quite like and that. You have to be in a disillusion. Yeah, that's quite powerful.
I mean, it's a denial. I mean, you know, it's a form of denial. So I knew that. I knew that. And I knew I needed to change a whole bunch of things in my life. And so it started with, okay, get yourself out of this situation that is clearly not helping you emotionally. Even though I was able to do the job, that wasn't enough.
And I
talked to some other attorneys too, and I got some really great advice from an old timer who I kind of confided him a little bit. And he said, he says, look, it's going to take you, you know, this is in my first year and I'm kind of a fast starter to things. So I got to a certain level of competence pretty quickly, but you know, there's a reason why you pay a lawyer after who's got 30 years of experience more money, because they they know what it takes them a lot less time to figure out what to do. They really know their stuff. They're worth everything.
Right. Really. Yeah.
But he said, if you, you know, you'll get to a point where you've done this and you're competent. And so you're not coasting, but you're able to do it. But it's going to be harder and harder for you to get out. And I really respected this man. He was
okay.
He had been doing it a long time. And I saw a man who, if he could rewind and do it all over again, probably wouldn't have chosen to stay in the practice, at least the type of practice. There's a lot of different types of law practice.
Yes.
But in that kind of contentious practice, he looked just worn down by it.
Sure. Okay.
And but he wasn't like depressed per se, but he was just really honest with me. And I really took that on board. I really listened to him. And I, and then I knew, oh, okay. It's not what I was meant to be.
All right.
And just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Okay.
Right. So
you were able to extricate yourself or at least take a different path.
In a sense.
Yeah, in a sense. Okay.
In a sense. I knew that at that time, although I didn't articulate it this way, that there really wasn't anything as win-lose, that we're all winning together or losing together, that right. These warring parties that I was representing were yes. in a mutual self-destruction mode if they didn't try and at least appeal to saving both of them right. as separate entities.
Yes, yes.
Looking
yes.
to both of them. So it causes so much mutual destruction. And as the counsel in it, I was a party to that. So, mm-hmm. you know, that it also caused suffering in me. Mm-hmm. So that learning was really strong then. And it's only now I see it in even clearer terms now that I'm in a different type of work.
Of course, I'm sure you would. Oof, Matt. I mean, I'm just trying to picture it actually, because you're painting such an interesting picture for us here about that time in your life. And, you know, I can just think of, you know, these couples, you know, they're in a difficult situation, and each party is probably feeling like, maybe I'm not really winning, maybe I'm losing. You know, I wonder what level of self-awareness you kind of need to be able to know that we're in the situation, we can still build some level of trust and understanding and actually emerge even better for it. Mm-hmm. What did you find was happening, either for your clients or for yourself during that time, in terms of
emerging
stronger?
Yeah. I mean, look, the clients, most of the clients that we dealt with, because we were in the nastiest types of battles, there was low self-awareness and a lot of just toxic, you know, just undealt with things from their own childhood. Right, I mean, it was not the epitome of mental and psychological health. Okay. Yeah, unfortunately. Okay. So that was a big learning. Like, you know, that's why I'm such a big fan of self-awareness work, because we also have leaders in jobs who are leaving dead bodies behind because they lack self-awareness and they're in a delusional state and they're treating people in such a way that they are not fully aware of how much damage they're doing to other people because they haven't dealt with their own stuff.
That is so true. That is so true. Okay. I mean, I actually see that as a massive blind spot, to be honest. You know, and as you said, it's because that work around self-awareness hasn't been done. So, I mean, Matt, in your experience now, I mean, fast forward to all the work you've been doing thus far. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things we can do then to assist people who have this sort of self-awareness blind spot, who are in that delusional space, as you're saying?
Right.
How can we help them emerge from that?
Well, the legal system creates accountability for people whose lack of self-awareness leads them to commit crimes, for example. Mm-hmm. So we have that, right? Deterrence.
Yes. Yes.
Our governments can create policies on a macro scale that incentivize economically and in other ways behavior that is fueled by and fuels better self-awareness, better interconnection, treating other, you know, the idea that we are interconnected and that my behavior actually has an impact on other people.
Right.
And it matters.
Yeah.
Our companies, I believe, have a strong responsibility if they're going to go around talking about sustainability and trust and equity.
Which is what we're all talking about now. Yeah.
All the buzzwords, right? Mm-hmm. Sustainability is about more than clean water for in perpetuity or clean air or, you know, it's much more than the environment. There's also a human environment that is totally interconnected with the outcome of the Earth's environment. Mm-hmm. So we need a sustainable way of relating to each other if we're going to have a sustainable environment to live in.
Yeah.
And our companies have a responsibility in that, if they're going to talk about sustainability, to incentivize the types of leaders and promote the types of leaders who demonstrate a commitment to continual improvement. Mm-hmm. And at the heart of that is a self-awareness practice. Okay. So to me, I don't care how smart somebody is, if they are refuse to accept feedback, mm-hmm. refuse to change, and treat people with contempt, essentially.
Yeah.
That's yeah. not, then to me, in the long run, they may win some, they may create some gains short term.
Yes.
But long term, that's not going to work. That yeah. you're going to in the long term cause more damage than you will victories. But you know, not everybody cares about long term. So let's be clear-headed about this. And we have certain things in our system that incentivize short-term thinking, like yeah. shareholder value quarter by quarter.
Yeah. Yeah.
The American legal system, you know, my yeah. fiduciary duty as an executive in a corporation is right. first and foremost to shareholder value.
Yes.
So,
yes.
you know, those sorts of things do create a misalignment with this. But I think we all know from our experience as human beings that yeah. that it matters, that great destruction can come from a short-term, you know, short-term ignoring what's yeah. going on in front of us because we're getting some value out of it.
All right. Okay. No, I hear you. I absolutely hear you. And I mean, what I'm also hearing is, yes, there's the short-termism in terms of what we're supposed to be doing, as you said, because we've got shareholder value and all of that to consider, but actually winning together in the long run makes a whole lot of sense. From, as you said, sustainability across the board, whether it's human, planet, even profit. I mean, if you can look at it from a triple bottom line perspective.
Exactly. Well. Thank you for yeah. bringing that up. That's called sustainable profits.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah.
So, all right, Matt, let's take it to the level of, here I am, I'm a leader. I'm working with my exec team. I'm understanding that perhaps I'm not leading this team well enough, but I want to try and potentially move away from a win-lose towards a win-win situation. Okay. Mm. What are some of these things that I need to be mindful of? So you already had mentioned, like, if I'm not taking feedback, I don't want to change, if there's contempt, but what are those actual steps that a leader can take to kind of change that narrative?
Mm. Well, I do think it starts with self.
Right. Okay. So yes.
That's the starting point.
Yep. So the leader will
because start. My receptors, my yep. filter, if my filter is corrupt, I can look outwardly to figure out what I need to change in you. But if I don't mm-hmm. see myself, then what I'm doing is projecting myself onto you instead of right. actually paying attention to who you really are.
Of course.
So it starts with what Tasha Yurick would say was internal self-awareness.
Of course.
And figuring out, you know, where you're at on the internal self-awareness. Right. You know, spectrum in terms spectrum. Of not really a spectrum scale, I guess, mm-hmm. you know, how internally self-aware, do you really know what your values are? Are you living mm-hmm. your values? Mm-hmm. Does your leadership style reflect what you want your values to be, mm. at least to you? Now, we haven't yeah. dealt with what other people think, yeah. but really being grounded in that, we can all get lost. And,
yeah.
you know, none of us are immune to that. We can all be jerks. I mean, my Lord.
yeah.
But are we willing to look at that and treat life as progress, not perfection, but that we are responsible for continuing the progress? So it starts with internal awareness, values, and those sorts of things.
Right.
And then it has to go to external self-awareness, which is understanding right. how others are receiving my behavior.
Of course.
And then aligning that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I've okay. got the ability to get to learn and grow. Without that, I don't have the ability to learn and grow.
Of course. Because I mean, yeah. without that, and I like that you're cementing that for us. It has to start from within, right? As a leader, even if you're not a leader, even just an individual, that level of groundedness, as you're saying, of having that internal sort of value system and bringing that out to then understand the perception that can be, you know, faced with that, with everyone else in the environment. That is the key to then unlocking how we are actually then viewing and going about building out this win-win sort of paradigm for right. everyone, right? So it starts from inside, moving outwards. Okay. So, you know, Matt, share some of your biggest lessons then to date about how do we win together? Some key advice that you really want our listeners to take away from today's episode.
Thanks. I think there's a few things that come to mind.
Okay, great.
One is patience. We don't do any of this work overnight. You know, you don't know what your programming is, especially a lot of our programming comes from when we were small children, those experiences that defined our sense of self early on. Those are not, you don't just get rid of those. In fact, I remember, I'm not a neuroscientist. I mean, yeah. I think everyone nowadays thinks of themselves as an armchair neuroscientist. And I try to remember that, no, you're a lawyer, you're a management consultant, you're an entrepreneur. You can, you know, but you were not trained in neuroscience. So just, you know your place.
Yes.
But my understanding of it just is that, you know, we can't erase the code in our mind. Someone explained to me like this one time. You're not going to erase the tapes in your mind that tell you, the self-talk tapes about yourself, about the world. You're not going to erase them. You have to write new code over those, essentially. New tapes. And in order to write those tapes to where the new tape, the new idea, the new thought, I am good enough. I'm not threatened by you, by other people. I'm not in danger by someone criticizing me. Right. That these things take sometimes a lifetime to write a new script, new tape that becomes more dominant than the one that's not serving you or anyone else very well.
Yeah.
So again, this is where self-awareness always comes in, because without self-awareness, I have no ability to know what I need to change in the way that I think. So patience with yourself and patience with the people around you. I mean, most people, this is an unscientific platitude, and I try not to, it's hard, but I do believe, based on my experience, that the majority of people I've encountered are actually good people, even if they're doing bad things.
Okay.
And by bad, I don't mean murdering people. I mean, just behaving in a way that I don't like.
All right.
Oftentimes it's a misunderstanding. I don't understand. I can't interpret what they're doing, or we have, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
It's like my wife, like she'll do something that, irritates me. And so often she's very thoughtful and she's a deep thinker, but she doesn't communicate the way that I do. And so if I'm patient with her, eventually I will figure out, I will learn, I will allow her to communicate to me in a way that's meaningful for her instead of trying to force her into my communication style.
Of course.
It will come out that I will see underneath the reason why she did something that really irritated me. And then suddenly I soften. You know how that you have that experience where the grace comes in?
Yes.
You have this whole construct of assumptions that are partially true. Yeah. But they're not completely true, and you're missing the humanity underneath it. So patience gives me the room to then tap into the humility I need to be committed to our growth together.
Beautifully put. Love that.
And that's really the combination. I need to pause. I need to work on my self-awareness and commit to humility. And humility is not humiliation. It is seeing yourself as equal to other people on a human level, not better or worse. Yeah. And then you can connect and learn. And then when people are doing behaviors that are harmful and wrong, you have a place to stand on to communicate your vision about that or your opinion about that from a different place other than a, resentment-based reaction. And that's a very different place to come from when you are resolved in something that is harmful behavior and I don't accept it. You can continue doing it, but I'm not going to continue accepting it. That's a different, just such a different place to be from than the shame-based, lizard, tail wagging dog,
of course,
lizard brain reaction. Yeah.
Oh, I love that you've made that distinction for us actually, Matt. And what's actually sitting with me is your comment about humility and how, I don't know why it's been almost equated to, if I'm humble, becoming a bit less than, we're not on an even keel anymore. And I'm like a step lower than you. And I don't know why that's happened. I mean, why has that happened? I mean, humility for me is almost that, and it's what you do, that building of that trust and that respect. That's part of it. That's the way I see it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the meaning of words does change. They do change over the millennia. And, you look at certain words and how they're being used. And unfortunately, in a lot of cases, words lose their meaning because they become whatever the person wants them to mean.
Yes.
So that's why I like to define it so that, even if you go to a dictionary that defines it differently than the way I did, I'm telling you what it means to me.
Yes.
And I stand by that definition. And I think it's a helpful definition. So I'm not arguing whether or not I'm right about what that definition is, but
yes,
the meaning behind it, you kind of can't argue with. I mean, the idea that we are equal in value as human beings.
Yes.
If I stay in that, I'm a worker among workers, you know, then my head won't get my ego so inflated that I start looking down on everyone.
Absolutely.
And that's not a good place to be coming from. That does not, that creates win-lose, which leads to lose.
That was just what I was thinking. That's what creates that imbalance. Yeah.
I had a professor once, one of my favorite professors from undergrad. She was my thesis. We had kind of it wasn't like a full doctoral, you know, thesis, but it was like a pretty robust undergraduate thesis. We had to write a book, essentially. And I did mine on a Chinese massacre in the U.S. These 36 people were murdered in the Northwest. It was awful. It was horrible. And I argued that it was a race-based murder based on all the evidence in the context of the culture, that it was not just a robbery the way the papers played it off. And I got empirical evidence and all of this. And in the process of that, my professor, who was a history PhD and a lawyer, she's just so brilliant. And she said, you know, Matt, because you got to think about the discrimination. Like when you have a law that says Black people, for example, can't ride on this car, they have to ride in the Black car.
Yeah.
Or, you know, non-white car only. Yeah. Well, the white people now have fewer places to sit. She flipped, and I was like, that's so simple and brilliant. When we exclude others, when we treat others as less than, we separate and we make our world smaller and our options fewer. And eventually, that is a lose-lose, if not immediately. Eventually, that creates the kind of division and war and just things that are, it degrades us all together. So I like to keep that in mind when I think about, you know, all of us together on this planet.
Yes. Why make it smaller when we have this massive ability to actually make it much further than what we think? I like
that's
that.
Right.
I like that.
Oh, that's right. It applies in business too. It applies in business. Absolutely.
I hear you on that. Oh, Matt, you've been sharing such beautiful insights with us, taking us back to some of your experiences and insights. I love it. Thank you so much for sharing on that. As we're coming to the end of our conversation today, share with us, you know, what's in store next for you? What are you busy with at the moment that's exciting and invigorating you?
Well, thanks for asking. Yeah, I've got two kind of tracks that I'm really excited about. So my company is Behavioral OS, and we work with leadership teams on trust and interpersonal communication, conflict resolution, really accelerating trust on teams so they can get to the performance and get out of the people friction.
Right.
And we have an exciting new assessment tool that I'm working on. It's a next version of one that we've used, but it's a newly designed version. I'm really excited about that. I'm hoping it comes out this year. And it's unlike anything else on the market. And I'm super excited.
Beautiful.
Then the other side is I'm working on some new media projects. I'm not ready to announce anything yet. It's my own stuff, my own brand, and just more media presence around relationships for everybody, not just in business.
Right.
Kind of like the theme of this podcast in that inspiring people to learn to get over their fear to connect with other people so they can learn and grow and thrive together. So I'm working on some media ideas around that. And that's 2023. I mean,
Well, it sounds exciting, diverse and exciting at the same time. So wishing you absolute success with both. And I'll be keeping my ears peeled and eyes peeled for both of them when they do come out. So fabulous, fabulous. We're wishing you great success with that, Matt. All right. Let's, as we roll out now in terms of the end of our conversation, I'd love it if you would share something that inspires you. Could be a poem, a quote, a song lyric, but something, Matt, that just keeps you on this journey of your own self-awareness, your own transformation, both professionally or personally. Yeah.
All right. Well, I was going to read the entirety of War and Peace now, so just settle in.
Oh, dear.
No. There's a quote that I came across from the founder of my company, who's unfortunately not with us anymore, and he was a dear friend. Yeah, but he used to use a quote in his slide decks. And at the time when I first saw it, because I was still pretty steeped in traditional business thinking, I thought, oh, that's a little bit soft for this.
Okay.
And then I have come to love this. Okay.
All
so here it's an unattributed quote.
Okay.
My friend, if I could give you one thing, I would give you the ability to see yourself as others see you. Then you would realize what a truly special person you are. I wish more people could see how truly special they are. They do a lot more damage to other people and to themselves if they knew that.
Right. That's so true. I mean, we often look in the mirror, but we don't see what's truly there, right? Because there's so many layers that cloud what our own eyes see compared to what somebody else sees. That's beautiful.
That's right.
Really, really beautiful. Matt, that's right. Thank you so much for spending time with me today and for sharing all that you have and all that you know. Really appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you. It's been an absolute joy connecting with you today.
Wonderful. Take care, Matt. Bye. All
right. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for joining me on this episode today. If you like what you heard, rate the episode and podcast, and feel free to write a review. Plus, of course, share with others too. I love talking around topics like these. So if you like my perspective or insight on a subject close to your heart, or something that you're grappling with, reach out to me in your comments or send me an email via my website or connect with me via LinkedIn, Instagram, or Facebook. All my social media are on the podcast information. If it's important to you, then it's important to me. So happy listening to the Inspire Your Life podcast, and catch you soon on the next episode. Bye.